This BBC podcast is supported by ads outside the UK.
Als Gründerinnen und Gründer willst du vor allem eins, schnell vorankommen. Egal ob beim Product Market Fit, deinem nächsten Schritt oder deinem ersten großen Enterprise Deal. Doch mit KI, die Entwicklung immer schneller macht, steigen auch die Anforderungen an Sicherheit. Und das früher als je zuvor. Wer Themen wie Security und Compliance richtig angeht, ermöglicht Wachstum. Wer zu lange wartet, bremst es aus. Deshalb setzen viele Startups früh auf Wanta und wachsen sicher weiter. Wanta macht es einfach mit tiefen Integrationen, starker Automatisierung und kontinuierlichem Monitoring, das mithält. Und wenn es ans Audit geht, seien Wochen bereit, nicht erst in Monaten. Jetzt starten auf wanta.com. Als Gründerinnen und Gründer willst du vor allem eins, schnell vorankommen. Egal ob beim Product Market Fit, deinem nächsten Schritt oder deinem ersten großen Enterprise Deal. Doch mit KI, die Entwicklung immer schneller macht, steigen auch die Anforderungen an Sicherheit. Und das früher als je zuvor. Wer Themen wie Security und Compliance richtig angeht, ermöglicht Wachstum. Wer zu lange wartet, bremst es aus. Deshalb setzen viele Startups früh auf Wanta und wachsen sicher weiter. Wanta macht es einfach mit tiefen Integrationen, starker Automatisierung und kontinuierlichem Monitoring, das mithält. Und wenn es ans Audit geht, seien Wochen bereit, nicht erst in Monaten. Jetzt starten auf wanta.com.
BBC Sounds. Music, Radio, Podcasts.
Hello, David here with a new series of explainers from The Briefing Room. In today's podcast, we look at the origins of the tension between India and Pakistan following a terrorist attack in Indian-administered Kashmir in April, which led to a short military conflict between India and Pakistan before a ceasefire was agreed. For a brief history of Kashmir, Caroline Bailey spoke to former BBC India correspondent Andrew Whitehead, who's an expert on Kashmir and its history, and author of A Mission in Kashmir.
First of all then, Andrew Whitehead, how far back do the tensions in Kashmir go?
Well, Kashmiris have got a long memory, and some Kashmiri historians would say you need to go back to 1586, because they would say that was the last time that Kashmir was governed by Kashmiris. Ever since then, it's been, in their view, a succession of outsiders. But I think more proximately, it was 1947 when the British left India, and in leaving, they partitioned the area that they controlled to carve out Pakistan, a mainly Muslim nation. So they bequeathed independence to two nations. Now, the whole logic of Pakistan was that adjoining Muslim majority areas would go into the new nation. Well, Kashmir, and the realm governed by the Maharaja of Kashmir, was adjoining what became Pakistan, and it was three quarters Muslim. So there was a very strong case for Kashmir becoming part of Pakistan. But the small print of the Indian Independence Act said that it was up to local princely rulers to decide whether to opt for India or to accede to Pakistan. And so it was for the Maharaja to decide. And basically, he delayed a decision. Pakistan got impatient and encouraged an invasion of armed tribesmen from Pakistan. And that scared the Maharaja, and he promptly acceded to India. And India sent a military force, which airlifted to Kashmir, managed to repulse the invaders.
But what happened?
Well, within weeks, India and Pakistan were at war in and over Kashmir. In the spring of 1948, Pakistan openly sent its own army into Kashmir to try and repulse the Indian troops. By the time that war ended at the end of 1948, Kashmir had been informally divided. There was a United Nations ceasefire line drawn up, and that continues to be the line that basically divides Kashmir into two. Though India got the larger share, and the important point, all of the Kashmir Valley, which is the Kashmiri linguistic, political, cultural heartland, stayed with India, and it remains with India. So that's what the problem is about. It's about that 10% of the area, which is the Kashmir Valley.
And how many times have India and Pakistan actually gone to war over Kashmir?
Well, since 1947, and including the Kargil conflict in 1999, which was a war in all but name with quite substantial casualties on both sides, there have been four wars between India and Pakistan. Of those four, three have been principally in and about Kashmir.
There's also been a history of insurgency within India-controlled Kashmir. When did that start and how has that developed?
Well, it started rumbling from the 1960s, but it really became acute in 1989 when a group of young Kashmiris, quite well educated, believing that they never had a chance to actually have their voices heard within Indian Kashmir, that elections were rigged, nobody took any notice. They went over to the Pakistan side and they were trained and equipped to fight. And they came back across the ceasefire line into Indian Kashmir and started an insurgency, which became for a number of years in the 1990s, which is when I started going to Kashmir, became really a very acute conflict. In terms of military activity across the border, we have seen that after a particularly bloody attack on an Indian base in Kashmir in 2016. Then 3 years later in 2019, there was a car bomb attack in Kashmir targeting a Indian military convoy and 40 members of the Indian security forces were killed. And in response to that, India launched an air attack on what they said was a Kashmiri militant base in Pakistan. And that also led to an aerial dogfight between Indian and Pakistani planes. And actually an Indian pilot was captured but then released. That was the most serious India-Pakistan military clash for many years.
Now, what about the semi-autonomous political status of Jammu and Kashmir? Because that changed, didn't it?
So when India became independent, there was a process of accommodation to try and welcome Kashmir into newly independent India. And as part of that accommodation, India's initial constitution set down a level of autonomy for Kashmir. It had its own constitution, its own flag. Not all Indian laws automatically applied to Kashmir. Over the years, those privileges were eroded bit by bit. But the clause was still in the constitution and it made Kashmiris feel a little bit more valued. And then in 2019, without really any notice and any discussion, India revoked that autonomy. And the way that it did it was also deeply wounding. Many more troops were sent to Kashmir. Schools and colleges were closed. The internet was switched off. Mobile telephony was switched off. And there were hundreds of arrests, including of mainstream politicians. And human rights activists and many others were also detained. And that still leaves a deep sense of wound with many people in the Kashmir Valley.
Has there been pushback against that 2019 move to take away the semi-autonomous status?
Yes, there has. And even the newly elected chief minister, who is one of the three chief ministers who was detained back in 2019, he wants Kashmir at least to regain the status of a state. And ideally, he would like autonomy back, though I think it's fairly clear that India will never restore that level of autonomy in the constitution. That's something that I think as most Kashmiris regret losing, but they realise it's gone forever. Otherwise, there's not very much room for Kashmiris to be politically involved. A lot of political parties have been outlawed, even if they weren't necessarily advocating any form of violence. And there's very little trust, I found, in the Kashmir Valley of the political process.
Andrew Whitehead, thanks very much for listening to This Explainer. We'll be publishing these every week in the new mini-series, so make sure you follow The Briefing Room on BBC Sounds or wherever you get your podcasts so that you don't miss an episode when we publish them. And also remember, you can go back and listen to any of our recent episodes on BBC Sounds. They're available now. Until the next time, goodbye.
Innovation bringt die Welt seit jeher voran, doch sie birgt auch Risiken. In einer Zeit, in der die Welt neue Energielösungen benötigt, stellt sich AXA XL den Risiken. Als einer der führenden globalen Versicherer setzen wir ständig neue Maßstäbe, um die Energiewende zu beschleunigen.
AXA XL. Risiken eingehen für eine Zukunft voller Möglichkeiten. Diese Anzeige stellt weder ein Angebot oder eine Aufforderung dar, noch ist sie eine Beschreibung von Produkten oder Dienstleistungen von AXA XL.